It plays the Dead Kennedys. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me Tuesday for the Kingfisher Project. My guest will be Bridget Brennan of the New York City Special Narcotics Prosecutor's Office.
I think the most important thing that people should know is that the drug supply is very dangerous, that there's help available, and that all of us are working towards the same goal.
That's the Kingfisher Project, Tuesday evening at 6 on the local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
What homeowners insurance do you really need, and how to keep it affordable?
One of the subtleties to look for is things like, if a tree does fall through my roof, is this policy going to pay to replace the entire roof or just the damaged portion?
Plus, author Rachel Kushner remembers the Eugene, Oregon bungalow that made her into the writer she is today. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and today we're going back to 2018 for the first interview I did with the fabulous Toby Poser of the Addams Family, which includes Toby, her husband John, and their daughters Lulu and Zelda. They are an incredible movie-making family, mostly horror films. The most recent, Mother of Flies. Check out their website, wonderwheelproductions.com. Okay, let's time travel back to 2018 with Toby Poser. Here we go. I'm really happy to have you here today, and I just thought we could start off with you giving me a bit about your early history, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, your schools, yada yada.
Sure. I grew up in central Pennsylvania, not far from Penn State. My family had a business there, a clothing store. My dad was first-generation American. And from there, we moseyed on to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I called myself Jew-mish.
I love it.
We lived right, you know, close to the Amish community, but we were nice, middle-class Jewish family.
How did that go out there? There aren't a lot of Jews out there.
You know, I think that there's a decent decent community in Lancaster.
Cool.
I think there were three synagogues.
Wow.
And one Reform, one too conservative maybe.
Uh-huh.
And we were in one of those. It was a great place to grow up.
Mm.
I grew up on the edge of a cornfield, which was probably where I spent my first days being creative. That cornfield, you could turn it into a stage or a labyrinth. And then from there, we moved to Baltimore when I was 10. I finished high school there.
That's quite a difference.
It was. It was really different. I think I consider myself a Pennsylvania girl,
mm-hmm.
but I had a great school life in Baltimore. And then I went to Tulane.
Great. So you went to Tulane and you got a BFA in acting, right?
I did. Yep.
How was your experience there? Where is that, by the way?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, right.
Oh, it's so great. You know, Tulane has a reputation for being a party school, and that always drives me crazy because there's so much more to New Orleans than just alcohol and Mardi Gras. So for me, it was, I think I was surprised by how wonderful that experience was. I hadn't even visited Tulane, and I didn't get into some schools I'd wanted to get into, so I just said, I'm just going to go for my wild card. And it was perfect. It was a small theater program, which was great because you have a lot of attention, you have a lot of opportunities to act, and it was perfect.
Did you know from the time you were little that you wanted to be an actress?
I think I knew around fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
I was in a play, The Velveteen Rabbit, and I played then this Nana, and I wore kind of a housekeeping dress, and I put a big pillow to have a big bosom, and I think that was it.
Wow. And so then when you were in high school, you went in all the productions and...
It took a while. I think I was a little shy and nervous to go out for the plays. And then finally in 10th grade in the spring, I went out for the play and I got it. I almost didn't get in. This is actually an interesting story. I have such crappy handwriting. And so I auditioned and the next day the cast list was up and I didn't see my name. And I thought, and I was crushed because it took so much gumption to go out for that audition. And then the acting director stopped me in the hallway and said, "Ms. Poser, or should I say Foster?" He said, "Why weren't you at rehearsal today?" And I said, "What do you mean? I didn't get in." He said, "No, your name, you wrote it Toby Foster, because I have such lousy handwriting." He said, "Learn to write clearly."
Oh, no.
So... from then on, whenever I have an audition, I make sure I print my name.
This is who I am.
And so that was it. From then, I had been doing a bunch of sports, and after that, the sports waned and the arts waxed.
Do you remember your first paid gig?
Sure. It was at Tulane in the summer of my freshman year. They had a professional theater called Center Stage, Tulane Center Stage, located at the college. And I did two shows there. That summer, yeah.
What were the shows? Do you remember?
John Guare. Now I'm forgetting the name. It was a strange, absurd, absurd
theater
comedy.
Theater of the absurd.
And I loved it. I'm forgetting the name. And the other one I think was based on Napoleon. It was called Napoleon in New Orleans.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So I understand from reading your bio that you were on The Guiding Light for 3 years. And I was wondering, you know, how different is it being on a soap opera than being on a TV show that's just, you know, one segment, or being in a movie or anything else that you've done, being in a play? How different is doing the soaps?
Very different.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It's a great opportunity to really work those muscles, those line learning muscles. You learn a bunch of lines, then you might show up and they might change them. They often would change them right before you'd shoot. That muscle was so well worked by the time I went out and was doing other things. I was grateful for the soap for that. But it's different in that you have three cameras. It feels sort of live, although it's not. It really felt like a machine because you're often doing one show in a day. You got a lot to do. It's a lot of work. Well, I think what's fun about being on a soap is that you are really playing a character.
Right.
And it could be, like, my character was Amanda Spalding, the Malibu Madam.
Oh, dear.
And she was so much fun. If you're going to be in a soap, it's kind of fun to be the bad girl, you know? And she... It was one of those typical soap stories where my father ended up not being my father, but actually my brother. And... my aunt, not my aunt, but now my sister and my arch rival, and love interests. And it was a blast. I think I knocked it when I was on. And the minute that I was off, I missed it.
Oh. How did they get rid of Amanda?
I was married to one of their big villains, Michael Zaslow. He was around for years. He was quite a bit older than I am. And he got Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh.
And,
you
and
mean
they
in real life?
In real life. And they kind of shifted him off of the show, which was not cool.
Oh.
And another soap took on that story, which was very cool. But he was well-loved, and they had recast him. But eventually they just finished our story. They just married us, and that was it. We were gone.
Off into the sunset.
Yeah.
You know, I know you do a lot of voiceover work, and we always hear about voiceovers, but I don't really know how that works. Could you talk about it a bit?
Sure. Well, there's voiceover for radio, television, industrials, and there's a lot of work out there. And it's something that I got into, I guess, not long after I moved to New York in 91. Maybe by 92 I started doing a few voiceovers. And I've done more voiceover for television than radio, but it's really the same. Just you go in. You could go in your pajamas if you want, which is kind of cool. And you speak into a little microphone, and sometimes it can take 5 minutes. Sometimes they can really work you, and it's amazing how many ways you can say a sentence. I love it. I absolutely love the voiceover world. And it's fortunately, I've been able to work with a lot of different people, a lot of different brands.
Mm-hmm. I know you did the Progressive insurance with Flo.
Yeah, I've done that for a long time, even before the Flo campaign. I've been doing Progressive since maybe 2003.
So do they say to you, this is your character. We want you to be like so-and-so. We want you to do this.
They might say the kind of read that they want. And often what I like to do is I like to do things three times in a row at a different speed, a different brightness, a different flatness. And that way I can get three. And I definitely think of voiceovers as a kind of voice acting.
Sure.
I really do. And I love using the voice as an instrument to convey different ways to usually sell something.
Right. Well, aside from working with your family, do you have a favorite gig that you did that you'll always remember?
I worked for Ronnie Brook Dairy Farm in at the farmer's market, the big one in Union Square, for a week, I think. And this was before they had their big stores, and I think they have something in the Chelsea market now. So I was selling milk in the bottles, and people would come back and bring their bottles back for a dime. That was a lot of fun. It was probably around 1993 or 4.
So what was your character?
Oh no, this wasn't acting. I was just selling milk.
I thought they had you in a cow outfit or something.
No, I'd probably do that really well. I have some favorite acting jobs. I was in an off-Broadway production called Ecstasy. It's a play by Mike Lee, the British playwright and filmmaker Mike Lee. And it had won an Obie before I was in the cast. And then the wonderful woman, I think her name was Marion Quinn, she was pregnant, was going to leave, and they suddenly cast Tatum O'Neill. She had to back out for some reason. I had a week to learn this role, it was and a Birmingham accent. And it was terrifying, but absolutely wonderful. The actors were fantastic, and it was just this cool play. Everyone's just drinking and smoking the whole time. I had to learn to smoke literally on stage.
Oh no.
And as my character got drunker, I think it was me getting sicker from the cigarettes. That was probably my favorite job.
Wow. But did you stop smoking after that?
Oh yeah.
Oh good.
Not my thing.
You know, I think this would be a good time to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with my guest, actor or actress, whatever suits you, screenwriter, and so much more, Toby Poser.
Housing is getting so expensive that in a lot of places, the workers a city needs to run can't afford to live where their jobs are. So some places are turning housing into a job benefit.
We are invested in having our employees be part of the fabric of this county, and we had to think of a way to be able to get them here.
That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, a conversation on the market crash of 1929 and the parallels we can draw to today's market trends. Journalist Andrew Ross Sorkin talks about his new book and today's financial landscape with entrepreneur Patrick Collison. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and today my guest is Toby Poser, who hails from Roscoe, New York, and is a member of the Addams Family, who make independent films. From soup to nuts, they do every aspect of creating a film and putting it out there. In the first half of the show, Toby told me about her early life and her preparation to become an actress. She also spoke about some projects she has worked on in film and TV, and we got a glimpse of what being a voiceover artist entails. In the next half of the show, Toby's going to talk about Wonder Wheel Productions, the Addams Family production company, and what her latest project is. So, Toby, up until last year, the films you did focused on relationships, often with childlike adults being schooled by wise, beyond their years children. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, I love that you got that.
Yeah, definitely. But last year, John and Zelda came out with a horror film, The Hatred. How different was that for y'all?
Well, it was a new genre, and I think they did an absolutely amazing job. And our daughter Lulu had a little cameo in there too, which was nice now that she's off at college. It was a completely different beast, beautiful to look at and just horrible. And, you know, if horrible and beautiful can have a baby, that's what it was. That was really their baby. I was homeschooling Zelda. And they came out with this beautiful production. It was different in that it was made probably faster than our usual productions. And we shot the entire thing up in the Catskills outside, which is really how we like to do it if we can.
You like using natural light?
Definitely, we do. We don't have any fancy equipment or fancy lighting. So everything that we do is what Mother Nature gives us.
Mm.
And John and I always say that often nature is its own character in our films.
What was Zelda's character's name in that film?
She didn't have a name. She's she and John's character both embody a kind of hatred. Zelda for the people who killed her family. John she conjures up John as a sort of evil demon of revenge that she follows into the wilderness to make things right.
Sounds scary.
What
are you working on now?
Now we're working on another horror/thriller film. It's, you know, the horror genre is, there's so many fans out there.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Hatred had great success. We realize the enthusiasm there is for a horror film. And of course, I personally love horror. I like intelligent horror that has a lot of psychological stuff going on. So for me, this is a wonderful opportunity to find a great audience. As much as I love doing dramas, which I do, I think that doing a horror film allows us to tap into a new scene. But of course, we'll bring into it the dramatic element. That's sort of where I come from and what I love. And so this is called The Deeper You Dig, and it's also shot up here, and it's beautiful. Last winter was creepy with the amount of snow we had.
Oh, right.
So we really took advantage of that. And John's been restoring an old farmhouse, and that's this time its own character in the film, this farmhouse in its skeletal stage with the snow outside and the darkness within. It was just, the house deserves an Academy Award.
So you're going to stay in the horror genre, and I'm assuming that part of that is also economically driven, right? Because have a built-in audience, that's a great thing for independent filmmakers.
Definitely. It's been really hard for us to make a living off of our films, and we would like to be able to keep making them and all kinds of films. We're hoping that we can tap into the horror genre to support us a little more.
So I know you have your own production company. It's called Wonder Wheel Productions.
Yeah.
What does a production company do?
Well, this production started as a way for me to do my voiceover and acting work. Everything I did was through that company as a corporation.
Okay.
And then once we started making films, it was just the perfect opportunity. We already had this incorporated company.
Oh.
And I'm very proud of it, Wonder Wheel Productions. And essentially, we are our own production company for the films that we're also writing and directing instead of hiring other people, where it's a real in job. Under the mantle of Wonder Wheel, we make these films. We haven't produced anyone else's films yet. Essentially, we could, but we're busy making our own.
So how do you get your films, say, into film festivals?
We submit through websites like Without a Box or Film Freeway, or at this point, if people know us, they often will say, hey, would you mind submitting to our festival, or can we see what you're doing? That's lovely when it happens that way, but usually we submit them just like everybody else.
How will you go about getting this film screened? The deeper you dig.
Can you dig it?
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll still submit to festivals, but I think we also, this time around, we might want to try to have a certain kind of premiere. In this case, since we really want to get it out there, have it seen, make some dough, we hope. And so we probably will wait less for festivals to respond to us and only go to ones that don't mind our being out in the field already.
Do you and your family have any specific things that you want to do before Zelda graduates from high school, goes off, flies away?
Well, we love to travel. We just love to get on the road. Often that's how we do it. We drive somewhere. And festivals have been a great way of doing that. It's been a wonderful way of incorporating travel into our life. If we get into a festival in Sedona, we drive out to Sedona. If we want to shoot, we shot something in Alaska a couple summers ago. We drove out to Alaska and shot through the Yukon in Alaska, a short that we never really finished. We want to do more of that with Zelda, whether it's film-oriented or not. It's such an integral part of our family life, exploring new places together.
So will that be limited just to the summer when she's available, or are you going to...
She's got a real soccer life.
Yeah.
So that does take up a lot of weekends and breaks. But we'll fit it in. I guess we would have to do some in the summer, but if you got to take off, play hooky now and then, you got to play hooky.
You know, I was thinking when kids leave the nest, that's often a really difficult time for parents. They have to transition, deal with the fact that their children are gone. And you guys are all so close. And I was wondering when I was preparing to see you today, how is it going to be for you and John rattling around in the house by yourselves without the girls?
It'll be pretty wild. Our oldest girl, Lulu, just left for France for a year. And we already got used to her taking off for college 2 years ago and moving from a quartet to a power trio in our film productions. So when Zelda leaves, I think after the initial shock, I think we'll enjoy it. And
there is that aspect, just the two of you.
I think we'll just consider it a new kind of adventure.
Uh-huh.
And why think of it any other way? I think we both, in fact, John and I often say, we're going to hit India, you know, in a few years when Zelda graduates, or let's go rent a cottage off the Olympic Peninsula. And so I think we'll really embrace it.
Oh, that's great. I was wondering how much the profession of being an actor has changed in the last, I don't know, 20 or so odd years that you've been, how many years have you been doing it?
Since I was 18.
Yeah, so it's been a while.
I'm 49.
Yeah.
You know, well, I can speak on the subject of age. I think that it's changed. Because I do most of my acting in our own productions right now, I can't quite say what it would be like if I were on the set of Law & Order nowadays. But I can say that once I hit my 40s, and we were living in Los Angeles at the time, things had really waned for me. It's one of the reasons we got into filmmaking. And that's not to say that there aren't wonderful roles out there for women. And I think more and more the business is focused on highlighting female filmmakers and actors. But I think it's still something that has to be given a nudge. And I think it's just beginning to bloom, I think. I find it really exciting. In fact, I've always been excited that in our little production company, three of us are women. John always said he wanted to be surrounded by a harem of women, so I think he got his wish.
Do you still have an agent?
I have a voiceover agent, but I don't have an acting agent. It's something all three of us think we'll probably do this year. I had one for years and years, and then I focused on voiceovers and being a mom, and then became a filmmaker. So now I think we'll probably try to dip back in, and then I'll tell you how different it is.
Okay. You know, I have a friend who's a playwright, and he told me he's always had an agent, and all of the plays that he's had produced, he has never had an agent get him a job, ever once. He's always had to do it himself, which I thought was really interesting, you know. So I was thinking, you know, what do agents do nowadays for actors when there's all of this stuff out on the web. You know, if somebody's going to hire, they could just look at your stuff and decide, you know, what does an agent do exactly?
I think there are some jobs that I guess I imagine you could find breakdowns. I know there's something backstage you can look at online. I used to buy the paper on Wednesdays. Every Wednesday morning it would come out. Now you can go online and be a member and submit yourself. I think agents can help and managers can help get into those things that aren't so easy to be seen for. Mm. Actually, one of my old managers is now a huge filmmaker, Lee Daniels.
Oh, of course.
And so I worked with him, I guess, around the turn of the millennium in 1998, and when he was a manager, and he was wonderful. And he was great. So nowadays, I don't know what it'll be like to have an agent. I too have gotten a lot of work on my own, just through word of mouth or people I had once done films with at NYU, you know, grad school filmmakers, and that, and then went on to doing their own stuff out of school. I think there's something to be said about being your own agent a lot of the time, but sometimes it really helps to have a good agent to get you in the door.
It couldn't wait.
No, it couldn't.
Well, Toby, I'm so happy you came in today. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Since this interview first aired in 2018, Toby and her family have gone on to enjoy a very successful 7 years making films and are in demand at film festivals all over the world. Please check out Toby's blog on their WonderWheelsProduction.com website. She's also a fantastic writer. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Tune in then for more fascinating stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character for the last 10 years, and I hope to continue along with all the local producers with your help. So please support us, as only you can do. We've been defunded, but with your help, we're not defeated. Donate at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Van Gorder's Furniture, featuring Lodge and Adirondack styles, as well as rustic collections. With showrooms in Lake Wallenpaupack, downtown Honesdale, and Milford, PA, Van Gorder's Furniture brings the outdoors inside. More at vangorders.com. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, cfosny.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
Well, hard times only get harder for so many people. For every multimillionaire, there's 100 people or more worrying about paying the utility bills. I'm Graham Rice from the Bagelow of Monkeys here on Radio Catskill, and I make no apology for again next week bringing you Singing Through the Hard Times, a choice of songs about hard times, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we talk comfort food from around the world with the beloved Yotam Ottolenghi. And we learn about classic German cooking with the wonderful Louisa Weiss. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.